It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Midwest has given the world some of the greatest writers of all time. Mark Twain, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Willa Cather, Ernest Hemingway, Kurt Vonnegut. We have also produced Mike Draper. You may know him as the man behind Ray Gun Shirts, based in Des Moines. Clever shirts that simultaneously poke fun at and celebrate our state. Mike has now made his first foray into the field of literature with the new book, The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth, an illustrated guide to the history and culture of the galaxy's most important region. Hi, Mike.
Hey, yeah, it's a fair and balanced look at the Midwest.
Clearly, you're not coming from any kind of a biased perspective.
Nope, yeah, this was just a purely objective analysis.
You know, you start out the book by writing about the time that you spent on the East Coast, living in New York even, and the response that people would have when you told them that you were from Iowa. How did people respond to you?
I moved out east to go to the University of Pennsylvania and then was in New York for a while. And that was when it first really started to hit me that Iowa was like a foreign country to most people around the country. And so usually it was just pure amazement. I mean, it was kind of a wide range of people were surprised. They didn't know what went on in Iowa. And so that was when I first started to realize the marketing potential.
Well, and you write a little bit about, not just about how people were surprised by the fact that you were from Iowa, and people always give you that line, "You're from Iowa? That's so interesting." I'm not sure that's an entirely sincere line that people give all of us from Iowa. But can you read a little bit from your introduction about how people would respond when you talked about Iowa?
Yeah, one of the things that kind of like encapsulated to set it up is when I was in New York, my car got towed, and so I had to go to the impound to get it back. And they wrote down my license plate number but put down under New York plates. And so I said, oh, no, it's an Iowa plate. And so they wrote down O-H-I-O. I'm like, oh, man, like, it's kind of tough because you don't want to, like, have them looking all night. So I'm like, oh, no, it's actually Iowa. They're like, yeah, I know. I got it. And so finally I was like, oh, no, Iowa is spelled I-O-W-A. And then I write in the book that this wasn't the first time something like this had happened. After 4 years out east, exchanges like this were so common that I hardly noticed them. You're the guy from Ohio, right? Aren't you from somewhere like Indiana? Yeah, pretty much. When I first met the girl who would become my wife and told her I was from Iowa, she laughed and said, that's hysterical. Oh, you really are? It was a match made in heaven. A drunk guy at a party once told me, you're not in Kansas anymore, man. I wanted to say, thanks, bro. I'll let somebody from Wichita know when I see them. A professor once said to me, ah, Iowa, where the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and the children are above average. At the time, I wasn't very familiar with the Prairie Home Companion, so I thought, yeah, this was a pretty astute observation of my home state. Now I realize he was a Garrison Keillor fan, but not a big Garrison Keillor fan. And so those are kind of just like a few of the examples, but you'd get it, you know, all the time of people who had like a wide range of asked if my parents were farmers, what I did growing up, were there casinos nearby.
Well, and I think a lot of us from Iowa have had those experiences. And you, this book is not just about Iowa. It's about the Midwest. You also spent many of your years growing up in Michigan as well. But is there something in particular that you think is special about telling people you're from Iowa?
Is there something special about it? Yeah, I think there's the quality that, in my mind, by my senior year at Penn, I kind of equated it to being from Poland, in that it's a country you've heard of, but you really don't know, like, any of the specifics. Like, is it cold there? Is it hot there? Do you guys have malls? What's the main export of Poland? With Iowa, there's a lot associated with it. It's kind of like this catch-all for, there's the dichotomy that we use of, there's, like, this simpleness about not only Iowa, but the Midwest, which on the one hand, they can paint you as, like, really trustworthy. So you've got, like, Superman is from Kansas. And then on the other side, you've got, like, the dumb as bricks, like, middle America kind of thing, where, oh, is this going to play in middle America? And you always get lumped into this group of people of, you kind of view the country as, like, the coasts are at the top, and then the Midwest is at the bottom, and this is where stuff settles in.
Well, it's interesting that your dichotomy in the Midwest is kind of Iowa and Michigan, and mine is as well. I spent 10 years in Michigan, and I understand that Michigan is part of the Midwest, but when I moved there, and specifically to Southeast Michigan, which is very highly populated, Detroit, Ann Arbor, you know, there are a lot of people there. There are a lot of people there who aren't from the Midwest originally. And I wanted to coin a new term for that because it didn't feel like the Midwest to me. I wanted to call that the Middle East, perhaps, or something along those lines.
But it's got its own problems.
Right, maybe. So do you think there's something cohesive about this whole region? Because this is a big area we're talking about.
Yeah, we address that in the book of, it's interesting, you know, how it got the name Midwest. You've already got geographic anonymity working against you, and so you'd probably want to have a flashier name, whereas Midwest isn't even a direction. You know, if you told somebody, oh yeah, go northwest, you know pretty much where to go. If you told them to, like, yeah, just drive Midwest, you're like, does that mean with like a pitchfork and my wife? Or it's a kind of meaningless term. And we talk about how the Midwest came about, but also kind of like the struggle of, you know, there are the two sides to it. You have some of the most heavily industrialized cities in America between like Cleveland, Detroit, and then the third largest city in America, Chicago. And then on the west side, you have, you know, the prairie states, which also don't feel Midwestern. And so as we kind of look through, we did find a cohesiveness that even, you know, states like there's a geographic cohesiveness, but even states like Michigan will kind of get lumped in, you know, as not Easterners. So I think the Midwest is often a collection of the states either not allowed to be in the East, the South, or the West.
Sure. And you probably experienced living in Michigan that since it is part of the Eastern time zone, no one else in the Eastern time zone seems to recognize that. So when you make a phone call from Michigan, they'll say, well, what time is it there?
Yeah. And I mean, the Midwest is the only region to cover all three time zones. So it kind of just shows people have difficulty with it. And people mix it up all the time. I think like Rory McIlroy at the Ryder Cup was late because all of the tee times were in Eastern time, even though Chicago is in Central time. So,
and you claim that that is what makes us good at math.
Superior math skills. Yeah, you always have to subtract if it's 8. They would say when I was growing up, it was always like 8 Central or 8 Eastern. You're like, wait a minute. All right, so that's 7 Central. But then, I mean, if you're in like Western North Dakota, you got to go all the way back to 6. So.
Right.
No
well,
wonder,
and if
no
you're in Indiana, they don't do daylight saving time. So in Indiana, the math is much harder.
Yeah, I guess I think they just switched that. But it used to be like just Indianapolis didn't do it. And then southwestern Indiana is in the central time zone. I mean, it's all over the map.
Absolutely.
We talk about how our therapy bills must be sky high as like a region of like, are we an agricultural region with industry? Are we an industrial region with agriculture? What does tie us together?
So you were from Iowa and Michigan. You went to school in Pennsylvania. You never planned on coming back here, did you?
No, yeah. As Garrison Keillor said that the Midwest is a great exporter of people, and I had kind of planned on being one of those exports. I went to Philadelphia. I met the girl who would become my wife, actually, in the United Kingdom, and she is from London. And so she, of all people, was probably more surprised than I was to be moving back to Iowa to open up a T-shirt shop.
What brought you back to Iowa to open up a T-shirt shop?
I think on the practical side, as like running the company, you know, you're always looking for like a marketing angle, but also an environment in which you can, sell product. And Iowa seemed a lot more appealing to me than staying out east. Just there was like a niche market that I understood, but also it's like a much friendlier environment. You know, some of the stereotypes about the Midwest and the East Coast are stereotypes because they're actually true. I mean, the people here are, you know, for the most part, nicer, and the community is supportive. And so I moved back for the really specific reasons, not necessarily because I was like so in love with Iowa. But since leaving, I've had, you know, this real fascination with what makes the Midwest the Midwest. And one of the funny things about writing the book is how easy it was to come up with examples of like exceptional people from the Midwest. I mean, it's like, it's astounding if you look at, you know, American history, how many things, major events are tied to the Midwest.
So you came back for practical reasons, but do you think, you know, I read this book, so I know that you're kind of having a love affair with Iowa and the Midwest. I mean, clearly this is funny, but there is a lot of sincerity there as well. Did you have to leave it to learn to love it so much?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you leave it and you really understand, you know, there's the little intangibles that make people Midwestern of, you know, everything from like sense of humor to how you talk. When I lived in Germany for a while, and you realize how much of language is kind of unspoken, of you'll say something, but there's a lot in mannerisms. And I found out east it was tricky, of the humor was a little bit different, how you speak to people was a little bit different. And so you do realize that there is actually a culture to the region that I kind of was a part of. And you don't realize that until you leave. And it's funny with how ingrained it is. You know, a guy like Ernest Hemingway grew up outside Chicago and never wrote about the Midwest, and kind of made a point to, you know, between Cuba and Paris to become like this world traveler. But all four women he married were from the Midwest, and he would always kind of like honeymoon at his, one of his favorite spots was northern Michigan, which is a beautiful place in the world. But it just kind of shows you, even if you try to get away from it, there's still something ingrained in you that, even if you've been like Hemingway to Cuba and to Paris, you know, you really want to go, you still consider the most beautiful place in the world to be something you associate kind of with your childhood.
Well, and you you write a lot about Midwest nice, and of course Iowa nice is a term we've been throwing around a lot lately, ever since Stephen Bloom wrote his article in The Atlantic, and we'll talk more about that later on this hour. But you you have wonderful examples of the difference between Southern nice, West Coast nice, Eastern nice, and Midwest nice. So can you define Southern nice for us?
Yeah, with what I found, and I'll probably, you know, preface this by saying, although it's academic, the book, and that we researched it, when it comes to other regions, we use sweeping generalizations. but we kind of saw always, like, Southern nice is people, when we went down there, would go out of their way to be friendly. But it often came with like a strange pitch for Jesus. My wife and I sat down at a Starbucks in Dallas because we were waiting for the art museum to open. And some guy asked me about my camera and how to move files around on his computer. And so we talked about it. And like 6 minutes into our conversation, he was like, "And have you found Jesus?" And I thought of like the Forrest Gump line. I didn't know I was supposed to be looking for him. And so we said, yeah, I guess it's, you know, you don't even really know what to say. Whereas, you know, Midwestern nice, I think, is like a true niceness. It's interesting how it gets, you know, it can come across as like passive aggressive sometimes. And people aren't as, you know, outwardly friendly of going out to other people. But I think people are kind of like truly nice here.
Well, and you describe West Coast nice as when people in the West Coast are being nice to you, they tell you you should write a screenplay.
Yeah, when I was in L.A., and I was only in L.A. for like 4 days, but I would meet people and they asked what I did, and I said, oh, I make T-shirts. They're like, what else do you do for hobbies? And I said, I don't know, I guess I like to write. And they're like, oh, you should write a screenplay. And it was always like somebody was the friend of like Aaron Sorkin or possibly their PA, and they could put you in touch with them. And everybody was like on the move to go to a party where they had heard somebody was supposed to be, and then you would get there, and that person had like just left. And so it was always a friendliness, but everybody was like selling, you know, it's kind of like blowing smoke all the time, which you don't really get a lot in the Midwest. Like we aren't very good at like selling ourselves or the region in general. We're not particularly like boastful.
I love the example you give of how you learned that being able to tell people you're from Iowa was really something of value. And that was from an important lesson on Magnum PI.
Yeah, I watched, it's always, I wasn't like left alone a lot. I just really loved television when I was a kid. And so I used to watch lots of stuff like from The Price is Right during the day. And there was an episode of Magnum PI, and coincidentally Magnum's character is actually from Detroit. And so is Tom Selleck. But he met this girl from Iowa. And so as like a 10-year-old, that kind of like perked my ears, because you don't hear a lot of people on TV from Iowa. And she had been like swindled out of money by her uncle, and she needed, you know, a loan from Magnum PI. And he's like, of course I can trust her. She's from Iowa. And he kept emphasizing that word as if that was the key to this woman's, like, core trustworthiness.
I'm talking with Mike Draper, founder of Raygun, a T-shirt company based in Des Moines, and author of the book, The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is Mike Draper of Raygun in Des Moines, the world's greatest store. Or no, the greatest store in the universe. Sorry, Mike. I sold you short.
Yep.
All right.
We passed Mars last year.
Right. So. And he and the folks at Raygun have now produced a new book called The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth, an illustrated guide to the history and culture of the galaxy's most important region. Before the break, Mike, we were talking about how you learned from watching Magnum PI that by just telling people that you're from Iowa, that gives you a kind of trustworthiness, credibility that you can take to the bank. But you say that while our trustworthiness gives us power, it's also our kryptonite. Where did you pick up that important lesson?
I think it's just, you know, you have this idea of, oh, you can't, we're not good at salesmanship, and salesmanship would involve like some sort of like fudging the truth. And so it's like, cannot tell lie, being swindled by fast talking East Coast person. I think a lot of the times, even if you kind of know what's going on, you'll like step back and assess situations instead of kind of firing from the hip. So that's what makes us seem like a little bit to people outside, like a little slower. But people would always have the assumption at Penn that I got in solely because I was from Iowa. And I didn't really like deduce this through parsing of words. They'd say things like, oh, you're from Iowa? No wonder you got in. And I was like, wow, thanks. Do you major in personal skills?
So they think there's some sort of affirmative action for Iowans?
Yeah, like Penn is sitting there like, oh, God, we've got to have somebody from Iowa to spice up things for everybody from New Jersey. This guy, Mike Draper, applied. Let him in. And so that's kind of the whole, you know, it's the idea of, oh, the East Coast schools belong to people from the East Coast. And, like, people from the Midwest get to, like, go there, like, our junior year abroad or something. Get to go to New York.
We're going to open up the phones. We want to hear your stories this hour as well. What's the most surprising or humorous reaction you've ever gotten when you've told somebody you are from Iowa? Or what do you think people need to know about the Midwest? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. On Facebook, Paige said that as a native Iowan, it's partly my duty to defend our state against naysayers, especially the ones who move here and then spend hours telling me how horrible it is. When I lived in Washington, D.C., strangers looked at me funny if I tried to talk to them at museums and such, unless they were Midwesterners. Invariably, the best stranger conversations were with Midwesterners. And you have a wonderful line about our love of talking to people. You said that we are people of few words, except when it comes to interactions with members of the service industry.
that was kind of the weird thing is if you, you know, ask, on the one hand, there's always this like dichotomy. On the one hand, you're like these stalwart kind of farmer type stereotypically where even if everything in your personal life is imploding and somebody goes, how's everything going? Oh, could be worse. But if you're ordering coffee and you keep it to less than 40 words, you're like considered rude. And this is if, you know, if it's your first time in the coffee shop. If you're a regular, you know, they'll let it slide. But I found when I was out east, you know, just making casual chit chat with, you know, somebody at like the dining hall who I was like buying food from, they would like stare at me for a second, be like, you know, as if there was something wrong with me, and then just be like, you are the nicest person I have ever met. It's like, wow, doesn't take much.
Well, and I think one of my favorite things about Iowa, and I've been spending a lot of time on the road lately, so I've had a lot of time to think about this, is how easy it is to get into a conversation when you stop at a convenience store. You can really have friendly interactions anywhere in the state, and people are open to it. And when you travel around the rest of the country, it really doesn't feel like you can.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things when I noticed like the kids from who are studying out east, who are from the Midwest, were sometimes a little more open-minded. When you grow up in the Midwest in general, and this is one of the things that's true for the whole region, you know, you don't spend a lot of time thinking about yourself, whereas the West kind of thinks about their like cowboy image, things like that. The South kind of thinks about, obviously, the Confederacy. And then the North thinks about how much money they make. The Midwest, not only do we not think about ourselves, but you don't see your region constantly reinforced on television in a positive light. Whereas when, you know, you're in D.C., things that happen in D.C. are on the national news, and the same for Hollywood, New York. And so that automatically gives you this sense Gene Shepard, who wrote A Christmas Story, is from Indiana and said that Midwesterners are born audience members. You know, you approach everything as, you know, already with a sense of modesty, which is what I think is important. And the other reason I think that we produce so many, you know, great observational, whether it's writers like Mark Twain or Fitzgerald, or whether it's comedians like Johnny Carson or David Letterman, or whether it's filmmakers, you know, like the Coen brothers or Alexander Payne. These are guys who can do, you know, who are kind of like non-regional almost. They can talk about any other region, and it's pretty cool to see.
And you think that they can see the world in a different way because they're from here?
Yeah, because you're automatically used to not thinking that where you come from is the greatest place on earth. And so you can see, you know, the advantages of everywhere else. Whereas often somebody from New York, if they approach it as, oh, I come from the greatest city in the world, everything is going to be in relation to how it could be better if it was in New York.
Well, and even when we do see ourselves on television a lot, you point out the fact that people say nasty things about us all the time. You know, every 4 years, we are in the national news because of the Iowa caucuses. And every 4 years, we get a barrage of images of people standing by haystacks, and you know, all of the stereotypes about Iowa reinforced, plus a lot of people saying Iowa should not get to choose the president.
Yeah, that's where the kind of middle America side of it comes in. You can just hear this collective gasp of like, oh, middle America, like why don't we make their vote like 3/5 of a vote? Why do they have to ruin it for everybody? And there's this kind of lumping together of middle America, even if it's something that happens in North Carolina, they'll say, oh, this is like a middle America issue. And so that's when, you know, when Stephen Bloom wrote his piece in The Atlantic, that's what I kind of noticed. At the heart of it wasn't necessarily, you know, dislike for the state. You know, the heart of it was kind of, why should these people, like these inferior people, be able to select the president? And part of me points out that the Iowa caucuses do not actually select the president. So I don't, if anybody's unclear on that. But it's interesting that how whenever you get too much attention, everybody wants to take you down a peg.
And we only get too much attention every once in a great while.
You're like, come on, right? This is our one moment to shine. Like half a decade, we can't get a little airtime.
Tom is on the line from Iowa City at 866-780-9100. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Charity.
Hi, what's your story?
You're not going to believe this. My former wife and I were on a train many, many years ago going from Iowa City to Seattle. We were on vacation. And we sat down in the diner car, and a gentleman sat across from us in an orange jumpsuit. And we got to talking. He said, where are you from? I said, Iowa. And he said, oh, yeah, they grow potatoes there, don't they? And I thought the guy was joking. But he wasn't. He was serious.
Yeah, well,
Of Idaho, he thought Iowa grew potatoes.
And I've heard that one too, Tom. I think probably we honestly all have heard that one. Of course, you've got T-shirts about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole Midwest kind of floats in this geographic abyss between like Pittsburgh and Las Vegas. And so it could be anywhere. It's almost kind of cool, I found, when I was living out east, to be the only guy I knew who was simultaneously from like 3 or 4 states at once, whether it was Idaho, Iowa, Ohio, or Indiana. And you're like, I'm kind of like an international man of mystery without even trying to be. Like, people can't exactly place where I'm from. And my parents are possibly farmers, possibly steel workers.
Possibly. Yeah, growing corn or potatoes.
Yeah, it could
either
be growing
one.
Corn. It was always a disappointment whenever anybody asked me. My dad's an attorney and my mom's a mechanical engineer. And so I literally knew nothing about farming, even though I grew up in like fairly rural Iowa. Like, I'd drive by fields every day. And it was such a letdown when people would ask me a question about farming. And I had no idea how the whole process worked.
There's a part of your book where you write about iced tea and what that says about the Midwest. Can you read a little bit from that for us?
Yeah, we kind of identify iced tea as one of our main traits. And so we say that iced tea has a hold on the region that goes all the way back to Estelle Woods Wilcox's 1870 Buckeye Cookbook, which contains one of the oldest recipes for iced tea. And the way we serve iced tea says a lot about us. From the nicest restaurants to McDonald's, you always get unsweetened iced tea. Many places don't even have a pre-sweetened version. They'll bring you iced tea, then let you have the sweetener and the lemon, anything you need to accessorize your drink. It's our way of saying, only you know how sweet you like your tea. Good luck getting unsweetened iced tea in the South. In fact, good luck getting iced tea that is just regular iced tea with sweetener in it. Those fascists add sugar to boiling water before the tea even cools. Watching him throw more sugar at the in is like watching somebody who's a type 2 diabetic put more salt on his McDonald's fries. And although no one can be 100% sure, I attribute the passion fruit iced tea movement to California. And I think that that's kind of goes to the heart of like our modesty of we talk about how the Midwest is like essentially a whole gateway region. There's gateways everywhere, from the Gateway Arch to Ohio was the gateway state to, you know, Fargo, Sioux Falls, Omaha, Kansas City. We're all vying for the title of gateway to the West. And even Indiana's crossroads of America, there's this like unspoken sense of we're happen to be, hopefully you enjoy yourself on your way to somewhere better.
You're ignoring the show me state, though. They've got the Gateway Arch, but
yeah, well,
their logo is a little in your face.
Yeah, I guess the show me state. There's certain things like that that come out of nowhere. And Wisconsin's is like a little cryptic, but there's this foreword, which is coincidentally Barack Obama. So it's a liberal plot.
And well, you mentioned Michigan's in the book, which I enjoy, which is Michigan, if you seek a pleasant peninsula, look around you. Just about as understated.
Yeah, you're like, it's not one, but two of the largest, you know, one of the largest inland peninsulas in the entire world. And it's like, if you seek a pleasant peninsula, look around you. And they may as well add to the back, but if you seek an isthmus, well, don't let us stop you. You can head to Panama. I mean, it's just so funny to... And, you know, we brought up, it's all the time you'll see it of whenever anybody wants to talk about a major accomplishment out of Iowa or somewhere in the Midwest, you know, they'll say, they always have to preface it with, well, we're so bad about boasting about ourselves, but, you know, gosh darn it. And then they'll name some, you know, phenomenal accomplishment that we've had. And I noticed there was a guy we found from Columbus who was talking about Columbus. And he says, you know, I think that Columbus, people in the Midwest are often don't sell themselves a lot. But Columbus has got to be one of the brightest stars in Ohio's future. And so he goes from complaining that we're bad at selling ourselves to this total understatement. I mean, you're like, how many bright stars are there? Like, come on, just say Columbus is the brightest star. And that's why we kind of try to set a positive example for the rest of the Midwest of being
overly
positive.
You are doing a nice job boasting for all of us. We have a lot of people on the line who want to share their stories. Kathy's on the line from Denison. Hello, Kathy.
Yes.
Hi, what's your story?
Yes, when years ago when I drove truck and we were up in New York, and it happened more than once, so that's what really struck me, that when we told them we were from Iowa and they would say, oh, Iowa, you're still having trouble with the Indians out there, aren't you?
Like gambling?
This is really odd. You know, we don't have any trouble with Indians down here. We're fine.
Oh, wow, Kathy. Thanks so much for sharing that story. I guess the things got fixed in the 1840s or 50s for some people.
Yep, 1970s. Right.
Julie's on the line in Union County. Hi, Julie.
Yeah, hi. I've got a story. My friend worked out in Los Angeles for 15 years. She's in the film business, and it's not necessarily funny, but she started to notice that one of the first questions that companies would ask is, well, where are you from? And if you were from the Midwest, they knew that you had a fantastic work ethic, especially if you came from a farm family. You'd get the job done. You'd stay late until it was done. It'd be done right. So that's my story.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for telling that, Julie. And, you know, Beth Howard, who is, she is an author, and she sells pie out of the American Gothic House in Eldon, Iowa. She told the story when she was living in Los Angeles. She decided she wanted to become a pie maker, and she had never made pie professionally ever before. And she, you know, knew how to make pie, but yeah, barely at that point. And the woman at the cafe she was applying at said, well, do you know how to make pie? And Beth said, I'm from Iowa, and she got the job. So maybe we, some of us know the power of that statement.
Yeah, in my fraternity out east, whenever anything would break from like the window or the plumbing, people would ask me to fix it. And I had no idea why until I realized that they kind of had this inherent sense that somebody from Iowa would know simple things like how plumbing operated. And so I was given all sorts of like powers. Again, at the time, not only did I not know how farming operated, but I didn't know how plumbing operated. So I guess I was just letting people down left, right, and center in college.
Well, we have an email from Nicholas on that subject. He says, Iowa is the greatest place on earth. Living in Chicago, I'm amazed at my friends who can't do anything such as fix a leak, change an alternator, replace a fixture, shovel a walk, etc. I always joke, if a water tower falls over in Iowa, we erect a new one. If one falls over in Chicago, they hold an election to form a committee to decide what to do.
Yeah, and those are...
I guess Nicholas thinks it sounds like you're from Chicago.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I guess my dad's from Connecticut, so I'm not playing with a full deck here.
you had some disadvantages coming in.
We've all got our cross to bear.
Jason is on the line from somewhere north of Des Moines. Hi, Jason.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. What's your story?
Well, I've stayed in Iowa my entire life, but my brother, after a couple of moves, wound up on Park Slope in Brooklyn, the absolute world center of hipness.
And oh, yeah.
Iowa is the opposite pole to that, I guess. And it always seems that, you know, when we trade anecdotes about our daily life and our commute and things like that, that everything he says is essentially the exact opposite of my experience. So I drive to work. He takes the train. He sees 15,000 people on the way to his job. I see about 15, you know, and it's just the opposite nature of life. It just makes it hard to relate at times that our everyday experience is just so different than that of a city with more people than the entire state. And it just seems like we have these totally different frames of reference. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's something I've noticed, too. Just, and I think that that's part of people's fascination when you tell them you're from Iowa and they start to ask questions and they say, well, what are the big cities? And you say, well, Des Moines is pretty big, and then they say, what are the others? And you say, we don't have like, other
it's all downhill
big
from
cities.
There.
But I think that people really can't understand that this is a state with 3 million people in it.
Yeah, I mean, we do point out on the hipster front that it would be hard to have hipsters without the Midwest. You do have, like, they all wear the Bob Dylan, who's from Minnesota, Wayfarers. They have cans of PBR from Wisconsin. Facial hair, much of it inspired by Indiana's Ambrose Burnside. They listen to the Black Keys from Ohio, and they love Pitchfork Media, which is out of Chicago. So we're at the heart of everything.
We may be the polar opposite of New York City, but they can't get by without
us. Yep. They wouldn't know what to do without
us. Right. Jason, thanks so much for your call. Lori is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Couple things. I grew up in Des Moines, but I moved away to Dallas, Texas when I first got married and then moved back to Iowa. I moved to Michigan, and I moved back to Iowa. And I think there's something very, Iowa draws me back. Even though it's cold in the winter, it still is a wonderful place to raise a family and to live. But one thing that we were talking about, the friendliness of Iowans, Dave Barry, back just before he quit writing his column, was in Iowa during the caucus period, and he made a comment in his column that just struck me as funny. He said, in Iowa, you could go into a convenience store to ask for directions and come out with an invitation to a wedding as the groom. And he said, that's how friendly the Iowans are. So anyway, that was my comment.
All right, Lori, thank you so much for calling. And Mike, you said when you got back to Iowa, one of the things that surprised you was how many other people were moving back.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the, you know, towards the end of the book, we kind of want to look at the Midwest of where it's going. There's this arc of, oh, the Midwest had so many great things going for it. And it's similar to America in general. But now everything's just in the tank. We're getting passed by China. And when I look around, I see kind of like a positive spirit that, you know, kind of inspires me. And especially in the Midwest, you know, not only did I move back to Des Moines to start a little company, but so many other people who I didn't know who were my age had moved back to start companies. And across the Midwest, there's little, you know, things are difficult as you transition from industrial to non-industrial, but it leads to a lot of opportunity, and that some of these cities like Milwaukee and Detroit actually have a lot going for them in terms of retrofitting old factories. And so when I look around at, you know, some of the big Midwesterners now, whether it's like I mentioned, Jonathan Franzen on the literature front, or even Larry Page from Google is from Michigan, Square, Twitter, Pinterest, these are all things that came out of like Midwestern minds. We're still even though we may not notice it, you know, producing some of the greatest minds in America. And I think that's what will really kind of turn things around. It's the human energy that's going into the next couple of years.
The book is very funny, and obviously you found that you had too many funny things to say to just write them on T-shirts.
Yeah.
But I get the sense that you have a little bit bigger mission with the book. What do you want it to accomplish?
I mean, I think we've, you know, from the spread out of, you have the Great Lakes states and then the Prairie states. And I kind of want to help, you know, unify that there is, you know, something that ties the region together, but also the region is, you know, exceptional. That's what makes it interesting, not its unexceptionalness, you know, having produced more presidents than any other region, being an actual swing region politically, whereas the other three regions are kind of more solid and you know how they're going to vote. And so that's what kind of makes the Midwest cool. But also when you just look around at some of the minds that we have not only produced, but the minds that are still coming out of the Midwest, you know, we almost wanted to make people think, yeah, you know, that's what I was thinking of. We noticed with our shirts, it wasn't that we wrote something positive about Des Moines and suddenly people who had always hated the city were like, you know what, that T-shirt's right. I'm going to start loving Des Moines. It was that people deep down really did love Des Moines and had been thinking the same thing for years. And so we hope that with the book, too, of people who have always noticed how exceptional the Midwest is, will be able to read the book and obviously get more ammunition for their argument, but also think, yeah, that's what I was thinking. This is a great region.
But if we lost our modesty, would we still be as great?
Yeah, I mean, the modesty will never be able to lose. So I think it's safe for us to have all the information about how great we are, but I think modesty is something that we're never going to be able to overcome.
Was there something that you discovered when researching this book that really blew your mind?
It's hard to know. I think the one of the most impressive things was just, like, you know, if you look at a state like California, we give like a history of California from like the Midwestern standpoint of, you have a guy from Ohio, W.T. Sherman, administers it when it became a state. The father of Hollywood was from Chicago, Illinois. You know, the father of Silicon Valley is actually from the Midwest. And then later the mayor of Silicon Valley, the head of Intel, is from Burlington. The most impressive thing was how easy it was to write, how many people are out there from the Midwest who have done so many great things.
Mike, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
I've been talking with Mike Draper this hour. He's the founder of Raygun, a T-shirt company based in Des Moines, and author of the book The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.